Charles L. Allen wrote, "If we realize that we will experience low tides of our spirit, then our moments of depression and discouragement lose much of their terror. Learn to wait for the tide. But in the waiting, we are certain the tide will rise, and because of that, we have faith and hope." Everyone here has had those moments when you've been on the high tide, that mountain top, that peak experience when you could see beyond the horizons and knew that your life was good, had always been good in spite of appearances, and would always be. Those moments are spiritual experiences, and we are more closely identified with our true self, our God self, in those times. And yet, even those highest moments are merely previews of attractions yet to come. This is a magnificent universe, and it is a benevolent universe. It's a universe in which everything is working together to bring us into the fullness of our higher consciousness. Now, in our ordinary state, in our present human condition, we are still asleep and dreaming most of the time. We've come here so that we might awaken. And our lives, our experiences, those things that occur to us are opportunities for us to gain mastery, come alive, and practice these principles that we are discovering. Now, most of the new things that happen to us throughout our lives are things that we never planned or dreamed of or even desired, at least at first. The reason I say new things is because a great deal of our experience is but a repetition of what has occurred over and over in the past. Have you noticed that our lives tend to take on the sameness, and even if we move to some distant place, we pick up and repeat in a very strange way the events that we seemed to have left? In a very short time, you'll surround yourself with a group of people who even look like the group of people that you thought you left. Different names, but similar identities. Repetition. Sameness. We tend to live in comfort zones of repetitious experiences and relationships, and though we often don't like to live this way, we do like to remain comfortable and non-threatened. Now, have you noticed that when something new does break into our programmed patterns, our response is usually one of surprise? We can hardly wait to relate to the next familiar face we see something like this. "The most unexpected thing happened on the way here this evening." Or frequently we will add, "What did I do to deserve this experience?" We're always surprised when something new breaks into the pattern. One of the most important changes that can occur in the mind of a self-developing person is to begin to expect the unexpected. Why, living on this earth, are we ever surprised at anything? We should never be surprised when anything happens to us. In fact, spiritual maturity requires that we begin to plan on the unexpected and to prepare our minds to receive the unexpected with great joy and delight. "Resist not evil or the appearance thereof," the scripture says. Why do we resist? Why are we shocked? By this time, you should be shockproof. You should be. And if you're not shockproof, I can promise you, you will be shocked until you become shockproof. And you'll be surprised until you stop being surprised. That's the way life is. It is rigged, but in our behalf. Expecting the unexpected with anticipation is the only way that we can grow. And this is the way that life tends to bring us most of our unknown good and our unknown knowledge. There's a tendency for us to not want to learn anything that we don't already know. We resist knowing what we don't already know, and if we don't have it in our lives, then we resist that thing, that experience coming into our lives. Expecting the unexpected with equanimity will add excitement to your life and will rid you of unnecessary pain and suffering. Most of our pain and our suffering is caused by holding on to the past and trying to remain in those little boxes in which we have placed ourselves. Now, chapter 2 of Marcus Bach's book, The World of Serendipity, is titled Expecting the Unexpected. Webster calls serendipity the gift of finding valuable or agreeable things not sought for. And serendipity refers to the discovery of goals which you stumble into or which stumble into you while you're in search of something that's altogether different. Have you noticed that you're out looking for something that you thought you were looking for and you don't find it, but while you're in the process of looking for it, you stumble into something that is better or worse, you think worse, than the thing that you were looking for. And most of the things that now exist in your life fell into your life. You stumbled into them. As a matter of fact, if you will examine the good things that exist in your life, you could not have sought them because you didn't know to seek them back then. You are aware of them now because you have them. But when you didn't have them, you didn't know about them. And if you'd had your way, you wouldn't have them now because you would have resisted the thing that you now have. Are you following me? Are you with me in this matter? Therefore, I say to you that serendipity is a pseudonym for divine order. There is a divine order. There's a perfect order that keeps impressing itself upon us, whether we like it or not. It does. Now, Bach wrote, one of the best descriptions of serendipity was given by a justice of the Supreme Court, Benjamin N. Cardoza, when he said, like many of the finest things of life, like happiness and tranquility and fame, the gain that is most precious is not the thing sought, but one that comes of itself in the search for something else. In the search for something else. The key word is search. In the search for something else. Very little good happens to us unless we are in action, unless we're in motion, unless we're moving toward an objective or a goal. The word search is defined as to make a thorough examination of or look over carefully in order to find something, to explore. Are you an explorer? Are you? Really now? Do you walk around in the same patterns, take the same streets, think the same thoughts, watch the same programs on television, say the same words to the same people? Is there that sameness in your life? Are you willing to examine your world, your experiences, the contents of your mind? Are you willing to hear yourself speak your words? Are you willing to wake up and become aware? Search means to make a careful examination or investigation of, to probe, to make a thorough check of, to scrutinize, and to become an explorer, a discoverer, is one of the most exciting things that can happen to us. This is an exciting universe. This is a marvelous world, and it responds to the person who eagerly seeks to break out of the status quo, especially if that present condition is good. Are things good in your life? Then wonderful. Don't settle down into that good. You've got some momentum going for you. You really have the opportunity to move forward and be an explorer. A closer look at serendipity suggests that there are principles or techniques involved in some of these remarkable discoveries that take place. Bach suggests that serendipitous people are possessed of three qualifications. One, great expectations. two great sublimations and three great observations. Now, expectations we understand. The dreamer, the goal, the person who is excited, searching, looking. To sublimate might be a term that we don't fully understand, but it means to change, to modify, to transform. Let me see if I can explain it this way. Once you have set a goal for yourself, have absolute unquestioned faith in your high and holy expectations. Keep moving toward that goal, believing to the very best of your ability that you're going to achieve it. And you probably will. Notice that I said probably will. That shocked some of you when I said you probably will. You mean that you won't achieve that goal every time? Of course not. I hope you don't. You see, once in a while, your goal will not be achieved. And in that moment, what will you do? Become depressed? Disappointed? Have a diminished or weakened faith? No, of course not. In that moment, draw upon your great sublimations and become keenly aware that though the first goal was not reached, there will be an unexpected goal just as good or better. That the first goal was probably not the one you were looking for after all. It was the one that you set, but there's another one in here somewhere. I don't know what it is, but it's there. I could give you 100 examples of sublimation, but let me use one that really does include you. It's the story of the entire process of building that new and exciting church edifice that even now is partially constructed. From the beginning of the decision to build that building, the board of directors, the building committee, and I established a series of goals. And most of the time, those goals were achieved. But from time to time, here and there along the way, an especially important goal was not achieved. But invariably, when a goal was not achieved, a better goal came along to take its place. And in those first moments when the goal was not achieved, there may have been a brief tendency to think what went wrong, and it was not a matter of anything going wrong at all. Something was going right. We just did not thoroughly understand it at the moment. Looking back now, we would not change a single thing that occurred. An example would be, about 2 years ago, we set out as a group to secure a bank loan to finance the building of our new $2.5+ million church. That's what it's going to cost us before it's completed. Now, are you aware that when representatives from a church enter the front door of a bank, the officers immediately discover that it's time for lunch? You are aware of that. They would much prefer to not have to say to you, or to us in this case, our money has been lent to someone else. What banker in his right mind wants to recall the mortgage on a church, if that should come to pass? Well, at any rate, after a great deal of preparation on our part and negotiation, our bank finally committed itself to a $1 million mortgage loan. And at precisely that moment, it became apparent to us that we were going to have to release our architect of choice and of record at that time. Things just were not working out with that great architect. And so we released him. At almost the same moment that the economy changed, the prime rate rose to 19% or 20%, and the loan fell through. Everything seemed to come apart at about the same time. And yet every bit of it was working together for our good. In time, we discovered that financing with church bonds became our first choice. And all the effort we had made for the financing through the bank had totally prepared us to move effortlessly into the borrowing of the exact amount that we needed from, guess who? From you, from all of you here, and a number of other people who are not here with us this evening. And we borrowed $1,500,000 from you. It's been the greatest thing that has ever happened to us because of the fact that you've been able to participate, and you have let us borrow your money at 12% interest, which was good for you, but it was great for us because it was much better than the 18 or 19% that we had been faced with in the past. Serendipity. Serendipitous. And yet, goal after goal was not achieved, but something better took its place. Bach is an author, and he says that every once in a while a manuscript comes back. And in that moment, he draws upon his capacity for great sublimations. He said that in 25 years of writing, every manuscript of his that was rejected eventually turned out advantageously for him. He either improved it, profited from the rejection, placed it elsewhere, adapted it for radio or for television, or benefited in some discernible and remarkable way so that later on he was glad that they rejected his manuscript. The early disappointment ceased to exist for him. He said, I can only conclude that if things work out this way with manuscripts, they must work this way with life. If we are sincerely serendipitous and hold to both great expectations and great sublimations. Okay, two rules. One is that you must be filled with great expectations that are never diminished. If your goal is not achieved, your expectations are not diminished. But you have the capacity to modify or to change or to alter your plan or your goal instantaneously, just like that. There's also the matter of great observations, one of the rules for the serendipitous mind. The princes of Serendip, from whom the word serendipity originated, developed this third quality to an amazingly high degree. And remember that you are a prince or a princess of Serendip in disguise. But you are. Now, the three princes began to see such immense possibilities in the power of observation that some people insisted they were either clairvoyant or spirit-possessed, and they were. They could see clearly into the heart of every situation because they were possessed with the Spirit of God. The story goes that on one occasion, they met a man who had lost his camel. Now, in those days, losing your camel was perhaps even worse than having someone steal your automobile today, because at least we have insurance. And that man did not have camel insurance. And he was quite concerned, and so he asked the princes if they had seen his camel. And they said, was your camel blind in one eye? He was, the camel driver said. Did he have a tooth missing? Well, he did. Was he lame in the right hind leg? Quite so, said the man. And was your camel carrying a load of honey on one side and a load of butter on the other? Correct, said the camel driver. How did you know? Well, we saw your camel some time ago, and it must be somewhere just behind us there along the road. Now, the truth of the matter was that they had not seen the camel at all with their eyes. And when the camel was not found, they were accused of having stolen the camel. And the emperor had them arrested. But they were able to explain to the emperor how they had discerned the story of the missing camel. They explained that they had noticed camel tracks, which showed the right hind hoof was making a dragging mark in the road. So obviously, the camel must have been lame. The camel was blind in the right eye because only the grass on the left side of the trail had been eaten, although the grass on the right side was more lush. Cuds of grass left along the highway betrayed the fact that the camel must have had a missing tooth. As for the honey and the butter, well, they had observed that on one side of the trail, great swarms of flies had been drawn by the scent of honey. And on the other side of the trail, ants had been attracted to the telltale signs of melted butter. Well, the emperor was greatly impressed by their powers of observation, and he said, although you have not achieved the goal that you set out to achieve at this moment, you have achieved an even greater goal, because I will exalt you higher than all the people of our kingdom, and every person in the kingdom will come to know you. Now, few were the subjects who did not know about the wonderful princes of Serendip. What does that story have to do with you? Begin to observe what's taking place in the world around you. Begin to be aware of other persons. Let go of the mechanical thoughts, the boxed-in attitudes that have locked you into your own sameness. And you'll become the most exciting person in the land of Serendip. I guarantee it, because that's the way it works. Were you here last week when I forgot how to pronounce apocatastasis? Were you? I was here last week when I forgot how to pronounce apocatastasis. Have you ever had a word that got sideways in your mind? Well, apocatastasis is the serendipitous secret that in every seed of seeming tragedy is hidden the fruit of glory and reward. And by the time that lesson was over, I was about to say abracadabra instead of apocatastasis, I'll tell you that. And there was something serendipitous about that experience, because I had to go to my dictionary to discover that abracadabra really is a Kabbalist magic word that from ancient times was held to possess supernatural powers to ward off disease and disaster. And those people who would say with power, abracadabra, cause something magical to take place in the world around them. We're always saying abracadabra backwards, like I was saying apocatastasis. See, there it is again. I've missed it again. Apocatastasis. But usually we speak the word backwards, and so the thing that we don't want happens. Be careful when you say apocatastasis or abracadabra. If you say it correctly, you will get what your heart desires. But don't get it turned sideways. Simple. It works. I called A.E. Martin. Remember that I told you the story of A.E. Martin from Oklahoma City, who caused me to start this series of lessons on the secret power of serendipity? And so I called A.E. to thank him for what he did. And while we were talking on the telephone, he said, "Let me tell you my most recent serendipitous experiences." He said, "Last week I signed the papers on what may be the biggest opportunity that I've had in my entire life." He continued the story. "A friend of mine had an appointment to have lunch with me about a month and a half ago. And he called me up on the morning that we were to have lunch, and he said that he was sorry, but he had forgotten to look at his appointment calendar the previous week and had already made a commitment to go to lunch with another person, someone that I did not know. And my friend wanted to know if I would mind if we all went together, and convinced me that he was not going to interfere with the subject at hand. And so we had lunch, and I met his old friend, who is now my new friend. Some things came up in that discussion, and I had information that would benefit both parties at lunch. The friend had something that he wanted to make a deal on, a property. And so it developed into us signing a contract for the acquisition of certain properties. Then just 3 weeks ago, I was having lunch at the Petroleum Club, and the people I was supposed to meet were about 30 minutes late, and I looked across the room and saw an old friend of mine there who was having lunch by himself, and I invited him to have lunch with me, and he asked me what I was doing, what I was into, what great things were happening in my life, and I told him that I was in the process of acquiring some property, that my friends would be along in about 30 minutes, and we'd be having lunch together, and I asked him if he had an oil rig that was available to go fairly deep, and about $3 million. And if he did, he could get in on the deal. And he said, "Well, as a matter of fact, I do. I've got the oil rig, and I've got $3 million. And so, because some people were 30 minutes late for lunch, and because his friend, on another occasion, had forgotten about a certain appointment, our friend, our exciting serendipitous friend, A.E. Martin, is now involved in a contract and with a property that has the potential of being a multi-million dollar deal." And you know what I say to that? Apocatastasis. Abracadabra. Wow, serendipity. But that's the way life is, if you believe that that's the way life is. If you are a dealer in life, if you're looking to make a deal with life, if you're are expecting something exciting to happen to you, It will. It must. That's the law. If the thing that you expect doesn't happen, don't be dismayed because something more exciting will happen than the thing that you expected. I do not believe that serendipitous events occur by chance or accident, or that serendipitous events are exceptional. They are the rule of life. But I do believe that they must occur by the rules that fulfill the conditions of serendipity. Serendipity has its rules. Everything in life has its rules. And you go by the rules, and you will have the experience. I agree with Marcus Bach that chance is a nickname for providence. Anatole France once observed, "Chance is the pseudonym that God uses when he does not want to sign his name." Don't you just love that? Most folks like to believe that life has stacked its deck of cards to deal them a losing hand. The deal that they're going to get is a bad deal. And they believe it, and they expect it, and they get it, and it's serendipitous in reverse. That is not being able to say, what was that word? Abracadabra. See? See how it works? Every time you miss it, you will have a wrong experience. Now, if you believe in the fickle finger of fate, and would like to convert the fickle finger of fate into the finger that does the walking through the yellow pages to select your next personally chosen miracle, then there are three conditions that must be adhered to. One is to be insightful, the second is to be philosophical, and the third is to trust your guidance. And when I was making my notes this morning and had written down the statement about the fickle finger of fate, in the background the music was playing in the church. And the commercial said, "Let your fingers do the walking through the yellow pages." How would you like for God to walk through the yellow pages of life to select the next serendipitous experience that is yours? Ah, listen carefully. Apocatastasis. Abracadabra. You'll hear the secret. The princes of Serendip made it clear that when a chance happening or an unusual probability runs into you, or you run into it, it's like an unexpected finding of a coin. Pick it up. Look it over. If you passed a coin on the street, would you not examine it to make sure that it really was a coin? You would not throw it away until you had thoroughly examined it. Now do this with the experiences that are happening to you. Examine them all carefully, and you may discover that you've been throwing away the most important events that occur in your life. Our most famous example is the story of the discovery of penicillin. You know the story well by this time, certainly, how the Scottish bacteriologist Alexander Fleming was working in a laboratory in 1928, and when he looked at some of the mold spores of one of his cultures, he discovered that it had produced an unusual effect. It had spoiled. It was contaminated. It was a bad specimen. Now, it's quite probable and possible if that had occurred many other times to many other scientists, and they had looked at that same type of culture and had thrown it away. But he was a Scotsman. He was not going to throw something away because it was spoiled. And under the microscope, he discovered a remarkable happening. The culture had stopped a small army of disease-producing germs dead in its tracks. And he said, "Something unusual is happening here." Do you think he was looking for penicillin? Absolutely not. How can you look for something if you don't know it exists? No one knew about penicillin or this activity. He was looking for something entirely different. He wasn't sure exactly what he was looking for, but it was not what he found. But he had the capacity, the ability to examine, to inspect, and to evaluate. Look at your life carefully. You may have been throwing away your equivalent of penicillin because you said it spoiled. Bad experience. Put your experiences under the strong magnification of your own mind. Now, secondly, by all means, be philosophical. Many were the times when the wayfaring princes of Serendip ran into things that did not immediately pay off. the bank did not finance their deal. And this becomes especially clear when we remember that the princes were, after all, sons of a king, and their ultimate goal was, of course, their father's kingdom. And very important that we know this. You are a prince or princess of Serendip. And we're returning to our Father's kingdom, which means that our spiritual consciousness is the most important thing in our life. That's our journey, that's our goal, and that was theirs too. The development of their consciousness was their goal. Therefore, they understood that everything that happened to them along the road of life was important to the development of their consciousness. All that they had was their consciousness. Everything contributed to the growth of their consciousness, to the expansion of their consciousness, and to helping them to achieve their ultimate destiny or goal, which was to return to their father's house, their father's kingdom. Now, if you have developed this philosophy, you will discover that nothing can work against you. All things are working for you. And along the many miles and years of your own journey, in a foreign land, meaning in strange places, you go into a foreign land every day, don't you? Isn't it rather strange out there where you go? You will discover, as they did, that your most important resource is your outlook on life. The only thing that you have going for you permanently is your own attitude, your own outlook on life. And every event that occurs will take a new meaning. The idea that every event and every situation can be sublimated or changed, converted to your personal good, is one of life's greatest philosophical or spiritual discoveries. And only a few people know this. Nothing is working to your disadvantage. The cards, the deck, is stacked. And you have a winning hand. Believe it. At the moment that I made this note this morning, a call came from the company that does our mailings for us. The post office had just called there to tell the manager of that company to come to the post office immediately to pick up several bags of mail, our mail, that had just been delivered to the post office, because a brochure that was included in that letter had another church's mailing permit on the brochure. Now, we weren't mailing theirs except in a closed, sealed envelope. The lady at the post office and her supervisor were adamant, and the man who called me said the only solution was to eliminate each of those brochures from each letter, to go down and pick them all up, take them back out, slit them all open, which destroyed the mailing. And it was time for the mailing to go. And we had spent not only a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of effort. And we would have had to have started all over. And it was one of those ridiculous, unreasonable things that occur daily in our lives. Well, having this powerful tool of consciousness at my fingertips, I said to the man, "Let me try." He said, "Okay, but it won't do you any good. I work with those people all the time, and in this case, I begged them and I pleaded with them, and they said, 'No, it's the regulations of the postal department, and that's the way it is.'" But I knew that there was a way. There's always a way. Is there not always a way? We may not always find it, but the way is always there. And so I called and the certain number at the postal department. And the supervisor answered the telephone. And I said, "This is very serendipitous." I said, "Abracadabra." Apocatastasis. Because I knew that something powerful was about to happen. And I said to this man, "We are very sorry that we have caused you this problem." And he said, "What problem have you caused us?" And I said, "This problem of getting the brochure of our other church in Florida into our mailing." And we were so innocent in what we did. And I've looked around to see whose fault it was, and I really cannot find who is at fault, except if there's any fault, it is mine. It certainly is not yours. It's not the postal department's. And he said, "Well, I'm sorry, but there's nothing we can do about it." And I said, "Surely there is some answer, there's some way that just this one time we can let the mail go through. I have read that the mail always goes through." And he said, "Where did you read that?" And I said, "There was..." And I said, Let me put it this way. If you were me and if I were you, what would you suggest? What would you do if this was your mail? And he said, "Oh, hell." Apocatastasis works. He said, "Write me a letter." And I said, "What shall I write in your letter?" And he told me what to write, and I wrote it. And he said, "As soon as the letter gets here, I will send out your mailing." Now, I was not about to mail him my letter, because I know what happens when you mail a letter in the postal department. I said, "I will send that letter by hand." Now, where is the serendipity in all of this? Well, who received the unexpected good? Marietta, one of the girls that works in our office. You see, she got the rest of the afternoon off simply because she took the letter to the post office. Don't you know how glad she was that we had a problem? Somebody is always glad that there was a problem once the solution has been found. Look at all the problems you've ever had. And I dare say that you're glad of each one of them. Trust your guidance. That's the third lesson to be learned from our experiences, if you wish to be serendipitous. When I was attending our Unity seminar, studying to be the minister, in my mind and in some of my classes, I named the unknown church that I would take upon ordination. I named it Unity of the Swaying Palms, because I said to myself and to others, "I'm a palm tree person," meaning I like the warmer climes. And even before I was ordained, I had offers in Southern California, Texas, and Florida. Just like I had said, I was a palm tree person, and I drew to myself these palm tree opportunities. But I asked for guidance. I really did ask for guidance. I really asked and believed with all my heart that I was receiving the guidance. And as I went to these different churches, upon examination, the offers, so attractive on the surface, did not feel right. And so I waited with some patience and a great deal of pressure exerted from the outside for me to make a choice. And time passed. 6 months passed. A long time passed without a newly ordained minister making a choice for his first church. One day, I was standing in my apartment in Dallas, a lovely, lovely apartment, a beautiful building, looking south toward the palm trees. Gorgeous day, overlooking SMU campus. And the telephone rang. And it was an offer to come here to try out for this church. The least likely place, and as it turned out, the least attractive offer that I received. But, serendipity, before I arrived, the offer was withdrawn. They called me back and said that they had withdrawn the offer in favor of another minister, another person. And I rejoiced. I smiled. I was a palm tree person. And this was far too close to the North Pole for me. So I came here that first Sunday only because I had made a commitment to come and speak, and I would come and speak and then head south again. In the middle of my talk, standing exactly where I am at this moment, having asked for guidance, I had an overwhelming feeling that I was being guided and directed, and this would be the place where my ministry would begin. And I was talking to the people, only a few gathered here. And inside, there was another conversation taking place. And I said, "Oh, no, God, you won't do this to me." And my guidance, the voice said, "You asked to be guided to the very best place on earth for you, and here it is. The choice is yours. Take a good look. Be insightful." And I also became very philosophical. I decided that I did not want what I wanted. I wanted what I needed. And my guidance said that I needed to be here. And I trusted my guidance. And I chose to be here. And this has been, of all places upon this earth, the very best place for me to be. I am with my people. It is not good for me to be here for you. It is good for me to be here for me. I love being here. Do you know that a number of times since God and I had that experience, I've had an opportunity to make the same palm tree decisions over and over again, including the opportunity to take the palmiest palm tree spot of all, Hawaii. And I chose to be here, and rightfully so. At the very moment that I said that in my notes, trust your guidance, my secretary came and placed a letter on my desk that came in the mail today that was mailed 3 days ago. It said, "Dear Jack, God works in mysterious ways. I have much to tell you, and though you do not know me, I feel as if I know you and hope you do not mind if I call you by your first name. It started about a year and a half ago when, out of sheer desperation, I attended an Al-Anon meeting. I went because I was miserable and I thought my misery was caused by my husband's drinking. Of course, I learned that we cause our own misery, and in this year and a half, my life has changed miraculously, though my husband is still drinking." Have you noticed how your misery drives you to do something, and then you discover that that which you did takes you in a completely different direction? I thought God had deserted me. Why would he let me marry an alcoholic when that was the thing I had feared most throughout my life? Who was it that said, "That which I greatly fear has come upon me"? Fear something and it becomes a goal. Fear it and you go to experience it, do you not? Of course, it was I who had deserted God, and not the other way. A short time later, a group of women began listening to the tapes made by your wife, Karen Boland, entitled Woman Awareness. Imagine our astonishment when we discovered that this woman, who appeared to be so happy, secure, and sure of herself, was married to a recovering alcoholic, you. It gave us hope for our spouses, whom we love so dearly. This tape session has developed into a loving friendship of people searching for the truth and a better way of life, and a sharing that helps us to grow in our own way at our own pace. And also, we have developed a mastermind group from which the most exciting things, the greatest miracles, continue to happen in our lives. Things that are almost impossible for me to describe in a letter. Then she writes me 3 pages describing the impossible things that are happening as a result of that experience. And she tells me how grateful she is for this miraculous way of life that she came into in a very serendipitous way. Unexpected. She went to get her husband fixed. He's still drunk. And her whole life has changed. And much, much more, and a sense of gratitude. And God bless you. And she signs her name, Judy. Exciting. Robert Browning, in one of his statements, described the serendipitous spirit quite well. He described you. You are a prince or a princess of serendip. And he said, to see a good in evil and a hope in ill success, to sympathize, be proud of their half reasons, faint aspirings, dim struggles for truth, their poorest fallacies, their prejudices and fears and cares and doubts, all with a touch of nobleness, despite their error, upward tending, although weak. Upward tending. Upward tending, my friends. Everything in this universe is up. Go out to meet your good because it is there. And if in a moment you do not see it, do not despair. Keep walking with a smile on your face. And it will be there to meet you. And you'll be so glad that what you found was not what you were looking for. And that's the way it really is. God bless you.
This concludes the lesson on side B of tape number 1. Now proceed to tape number 2 for the continuation of The Secret Power of Serendipity.